It is the Comedy at the Carlson Cast! Carlson Cast. There's Rochester's King of Comedy, it's Vinny Paulino.
Recognize! Sexy.
There's the Duke of Delight, it's Brian Ball, he's going away.
I've never been a Duke.
There's me, it's offensive to say Queen of something, but there he is. And everybody's got the fastest fingers in Rochester, it's Cam Taylor, everybody! This episode, number 56, Jamie Lee!
Wow. Brian is a Duke, all right. Welcome to the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. Thank you, Ross Johnson, for that. Adequate as usual. Opening. Just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I'm Vinny Paulino, your host. It's a great day in Rochester, New York. We are coming to you live from inside of one of the country's greatest comedy clubs, Comedy at the Carlson. By God, just the best.
And we're all so very happy to be here. It's a nice morning out. It's a little chilly.
I rarefied air, man. I'm feeling good today. We got a special guest, Jamie Lee from HBO's Crashing. She's a writer. She's an author. She went from writing on a show to acting on a show. She has some interesting stories. And she grew up in Dallas. So, I mean, there's lots of questions about Texas. I always have questions about Texas.
I think Texas itself is a question.
Nailed it. So I want to thank you for tuning in at home. You guys are incredible. One of the best listeners/viewers in the world, all of you. We love you. And I'm not panhandling, but I will build a statue if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. I just want you to know that.
And not a big one.
Probably out of potatoes before I eat them.
I was going to say mashed potatoes.
Yeah. Yes, but do us a favor. I cannot ask you enough. Could you do us a favor? Leave us a 5-star rating. Leave us a review. We really appreciate it. And for those of you this week who leave the best review, in my opinion, I'm going to give you a very special gift. You see, I want this to go to somebody who really deserves it. Our friend Jim LaChase left the club this past week. He's dealing with some illness and stuff. He cleared out his office, and he left this amazing Captain America mug that I gave him for Christmas last year. He just left it. So I want to give it to someone who's thankful. So if you could just show me a thread of thankfulness and gratitude in our iTunes review, you will get yourself a Captain America mug. It's very nice.
The shield is not functional, though. It will not protect
you. Are we eligible to win?
No, but you could throw this at someone, but I don't recommend it. It's not what it's against the terms of service. Yeah, I don't know.
It's not really aerodynamic either.
No, it would hurt. So if you want to win a mug that was Jim LaChase's, leave us a 5-star review and a little blurb. So thank you. We would appreciate you doing that. Let's get into some important stuff before we do stand-up news this morning. Cam, could you hit that slide for me? October, folks, is Alzheimer's Awareness Month, and I don't know if you know this, more than 5 million Americans live with Alzheimer's and other dementias. More than 16 million family members and friends provide unpaid care. Join the fight against the disease. Walk to End Alzheimer's on October 20th at Frontier Field in Rochester. To register or find a walk near you, call 1-800-272-3900 or visit alz.org. Together, we can raise awareness and funds to enhance Alzheimer's care and advance critical research. Thank you, Cam. No, you and I are going to that, aren't we, buddy?
Yes, we are. I'll be there.
Absolutely. Cam lost his mom not too long ago from this
and
awful disease. And his dad. And, you know, Brian's mom is dealing with a lot of problems, too.
Yeah.
Not to pull back the curtain on that, but we care very much about this, and we are going to be there. So we hope you will be, too. Cam, back to us. Back to our regular scheduled programming. Let's do our sponsors real fast, Brian. What do you say?
Let's do that.
Let's get them out here, man. Let's start with our pal, Joe. Chef Joe at Sapori, baby.
It was just his birthday the other day.
It was his birthday. Yeah. Very happy birthday to you, Chef Joe.
I bet the food was great at his party.
I couldn't imagine going. I would die.
I was not invited. But I'm just imagining that it was probably pretty good. I'm not bitter about it, but I'm just saying.
Poor Brian.
I know. Were you invited?
Yes.
I don't believe that.
But I was, of course I was invited. He'll tell you. You ask him. Was Vinny? Yes, he'll tell you. Of course I was invited. I just do the same thing I do whenever people invite me to things. Tell them I'm washing my hair. I'm busy. I'm a busy guy. I'm busy. I'm sorry.
Vinny got something else to do, Paulina.
That's me, baby. I'm always doing something that isn't what you want me to be doing. Ask my wife. Sapori Cafe Catering at Sapori Rochester, located inside the Powers Building atrium. They will make you lunch there, or they can cater your very own special event. They do graduation, showers, weddings, birthdays, corporate events, vacuum barbecues, and more. Like I said, find them on Instagram or visit their website, sapori-rochester.com. Sapori, it's Italian for flavor.
Favore.
That's not a thing.
By the way, you said Baku Barbecues, which is that's a city in the Middle East.
Yeah.
So they cater all the way to Baku?
Oh, no. They do Baku-style barbecues.
Oh, okay. All right. That's very unique.
I didn't
cuisine.
Mess this up at all. Shut up, Brian. Next one, Three Heads Brewing. Oh, my goodness. Mm. Big things coming up in October. Let me just say the Three Heads Halloween party is a blast.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Put that on your calendars. Threeheadsbrewing.com for more information. If you're coming to a show this weekend, you want a beer, get yourself a Three Heads. They are on tap here at Comedy at the Carlson, and you will enjoy. Last but not least, certainly not least, Iron Smoke Whiskey, handcrafted in upstate New York, available in two fine varieties, Rattlesnake Rosie's Apple Pie Whiskey and regular, traditional, get-you-drunk Applewood Smoked Whiskey. We love it. Handcrafted in upstate New York. Check it out, ironsmokewhiskey.com. All right, back to me, Cam. In the studio, we are welcoming our good friend, our very, very dear to us. Right, Brian?
Dear to... at least dozens of people.
It's Ross Johnson. Hey, Don. Ross. Ross.
I feel like I died.
You got to show the Ross one, remember?
Not yet.
There you go. Okay. There you go. Ross.
There I am.
Frame.
Look at that.
Yay.
I can figure that out.
We don't have a lot of problems around here.
How you doing?
I'm good, buddy. Good morning.
Good morning. That's feeling pretty good.
Great to have you here.
It is great to be here.
A lot of things going on in stand-up news.
There is a lot going on in stand-up news. And I wanted to start with the... I wanted to get the I wanted to get one out of the way.
All right. Okay.
Of course, TV's favorite dad, stand-up comedy legend, right? Everybody knows this guy.
Is it Bill Burr now? Is he going to be America's dad because that F is for family show? And wouldn't that be good if we just gave it to Bill Burr?
Yeah, just pass it on.
He's now America's most famous sex offender. Of course, I'm talking about Mr. Bill Cosby.
Never heard of him.
Sentenced this past week in the drugging and sexual assault of Andrea Constand, alongside many, 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 many other accusations. He'll be serving 3 to 10 years, and he has to register as a sexually violent predator, and went right off to jail. Appeals are still pending, of course, but...
Now, have you read any of the stories of what's been going on in the jail with... Dr. Cosby.
I've not.
Did they
seen
strip
a lot.
Him of that honorary doctorate yet? I'm just curious.
No, he's got a. So he's got.
Can he hang that in his jail cell?
He's got a legitimate. He's got a real doctorate that apparently they can't take away. But I think pretty much all the rest of them are gone.
CNN published his menu, like what he eats every day. I thought, wow, that's a deep dive for content there, CNN.
Well, they also told a story about how his first day someone threw a hot dog bun at him.
Is that true?
Yeah, that was in the news. That made me laugh really hard.
That's the most useless assault I've ever heard of in my entire life.
But it's just taunting him.
Yeah, and it's not...
I'd have thrown Jell-O.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's not very thematic.
I also read something, and I can't confirm it. I also read that they took his cane away and he fell down like a stair. Or something like that.
Single
stair?
That sounds made up.
I don't know. Listen, I'm just saying. Poor guy. poor fella. The poor man.
Oh, Vinny always knows his good story about falling.
I don't know what to do. I've got
the second someone falls. Listen, man. I don't care how
pitiable,
unsympathetic a person can be. Once you fall down, I know your pain. That's all I'm saying.
I've got a copy of Congratulations, Now What? That my mom gave me for, like, college graduation that she, like, wrote in and signed. And I have no idea this is a Bill Cosby book. So I have no idea, like, what do I do with that? It's been sitting there for months. I've been agonizing over this.
Well,
like,
I wouldn't throw it out. You don't want the garbage man to think you're a monster.
My neighbor's
it's got my name
my
in
trash.
It. Like, so I don't know. I'm just gonna have to bury that somewhere.
Another Cosby acolyte.
Of course, Vinny. This is the section of the show that we always like to talk about. What happened on Dancing with the Stars?
DWTS.
Season 27.
Is it season 27?
It's season 27. Jesus. Swear to God. That is absolutely 100% true.
I feel like that may be a bit excessive.
That is... That's a lot of... But they do like three a year, I think. So it's not...
No.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Because I feel like they're like on the 50th anniversary of Survivor right now.
Yeah, that's something like
that. All right. So what happened?
Of course, Carlson, Comedy at the Carlson, legend and favorite, Nikki Glaser.
Friend of the show.
Sad news. Nikki Glaser was the first to be eliminated in the 27th season of Dancing with the Stars.
She's number one. She's number one. She's number one.
That is,
I demand a recount.
Hullabaloo.
Yeah.
She's too good for that. You deserve better, Nikki.
So, so is it a thing where, you know, like if you get knocked out at the Olympics, you're still an Olympic level athlete? Like to get on Dancing with the Stars, do you have to just be? I'm the news person. I should know this, but do you have to be a pretty good dancer, or can you just any famous person kind of sign up?
It's got to be a famous person.
I think you have to be a famous person. They try to whip you into shape.
Okay, so there's nothing good to say about
this. I know she went through like the she said the training for it was grueling.
That's honestly, that's the only reason I've decided not to be famous.
Right.
Because you don't want
to. I just don't want to have to deal with the constant barrages to be on these dancing shows. It's just, I don't have the time.
So another another big news in the comedy person going out there. He's Conan O'Brien. Everybody we love from his
Ross
favorite. Yeah,
that's not Conan O'Brien.
Oh no, that's just a picture I like. You can. That's unrelated. Entirely.
All right.
Let's just be careful as
it's
you
from
go
the
through
personal
these.
Collection.
Just be careful as you go through my folder, please. If you want to look ahead and make sure.
Would you please check the files before you send them? I know.
What are we allowed
you
to
show?
You
saw Conan.
Just out of curiosity.
There it is.
So Conan O'Brien, he's going on his first comedy tour since 2010. It's going to be called Team Coco Presents Conan and Friends. An evening of stand-up and investment tips.
Couldn't you just call it Team Coco?
I think so.
Team Coco Live.
That's what I would do, because it's not anything else. Just scrolls off the Ticketmaster website, and you can't see what it is anyway.
Right.
It's going to kick off on November 2nd in Washington, D.C. It's going to be around the country. He's got 18 dates, et cetera, et cetera.
Good I'd go watch that. I think Conan's great.
He's a good guy, right?
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
Friend of the Carlson, Ron Funches, will be there.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Very true.
Look at that. You surprised the newsman,
Cam. This is amazing.
Wow. Someone's getting a promotion. It's not Ross. All right, what else we got?
Okay, so I definitely need to refer to my notes for this one. So I'm going to recap. This is the biggest thing happening in comedy right now. It's all centered around Cat Williams.
We
all
know.
It all comes back to Cat Williams.
His retreat into the food emporium,
so
right?
I'm gonna recap.
The
he's still there.
Emporium.
Help is on the way, Cat Williams.
Where are the raisins?
Just stay behind
the night staff thinks the place is haunted. They just hear calls for help coming from like behind soup cans. They don't know what's going on. For those of you who are just tuning in for the first time, watch last week's episode. You will get these jokes. It's a callback.
I'll give you a very quick recap.
A callback.
Please do.
So Cat Williams appeared on Atlanta's Frank and Wanda show and made fun of Tiffany Haddish, saying that she didn't have the chops for the Netflix money she was getting and all that. Wanda Smith's husband, Lamoris Sellers, later allegedly.
The host of the show. The host of the show's
the
husband.
The husband of the host of the show.
Correct.
Allegedly pointed a gun at Cat Williams. For some reason, that was not clear in any of the reporting I saw, but apparently he was upset about Tiffany Haddish, I guess.
Loves Tiffany Haddish.
to retreat into the nearby food land, where, as far as we know, he remains to this day. Okay, so there's...
We've heard no reports otherwise.
Okay. Keep going.
Still going. Okay, but it's still going. So, so Kevin Hart. Okay, so this is the update. This is what's going on now with this.
Okay.
This is keeping us current. Cat Williams still in the food land. Kevin Hart.
I'm behind the beans, baby.
That's Dusty Rhodes, you idiot.
Appeared on the Breakfast Club to basically rip Cat Williams about his comments.
Right.
Not at all feeling bad about what Cat Williams has been through. Kevin Hart, he erroneously included Leslie
Jones.
Will
someone think of Cat Williams? Okay.
I mean, I'm sure there's a bathroom there.
What if there's a sale
food,
on the
so
raisins? Where's he going to go?
So when Kevin Hart was ripping Cat Williams, he erroneously included Leslie Jones among the list of black female comedians, like along with Tiffany Haddish, that Cat Williams had
besmirched.
So included Leslie Jones in this list of black female comedians.
Okay.
Leslie
so
Jones.
This host grabbed a gun and went to go find Cat Williams in the food land.
Well, it's close.
He
Leslie Jones
the freezer at Taco Bell.
Leslie Jones responds. and I will I will read.
I love Leslie
this is
Jones.
Heavily redacted. This is as graphic as this is heavily redacted, by the way, her
okay.
response. So
great.
Both of them need to keep my name out their mouth unless they're using it to eat my pussy. At least Kat put me on his tour. Kevin could have put me on a long time ago, but he never respected me or my comedy, and trust I can call his card, he know I can. Both Kevin and Kat was the same to women, shitty and still is. Women have never had it good, so I'm calling all the cards, I ain't gotta lie, I made it without either one of them.
What a
heavily redacted, by the way. That was like, that was editing approximately every
mic drop.
Leslie Jones is not having it from Kevin Hart or Kat Williams, whatever anybody said.
I love that. Good for her.
Yep.
My kind of woman.
I absolutely have a
I want to start a slow chant.
Action figure that I was going to bring in.
Leslie. Good for her.
Yes.
But good for her. So, that is the latest update. We will of course keep you posted. Come back next week to find out
if you ever made it past the checkout.
For God's sake, somebody go knock on the door of that food court.
Just I got nothing. Yep. Just tweet him or something. See if he's okay.
Just let us know, Kat Williams. If you drop us a line, let us know you're fine and say it's important.
Absolutely. So we are going to be back in just a few minutes with Jamie Lee. The text line is open, folks. So feel free to text your questions at 585-484-0265, and we'll be back right after these words from the good folks at Comedy at the Carlson and us.
And us.
Nah. No.
Hey folks, we have some big shows coming up here at Comedy at Carlson this fall, so we want to make sure you know about them. This weekend, we have the great Jamie Lee from HBO's Crashing. Coming up next week, we have Brett Morin, October 4th through the 6th. Todd Youngin presents Pancakes and Kegels, October 10th, one night only. Rob Schneider, October 12th and 13th. I also hear Jamie Lissau is going to be there. Pauly Shore, one night only, Sunday, October 14th. How's that for a busy weekend? And we got my man Rick Matthews, one night only, October 18th. Michael Costa from The Daily Show, October 19th and 20th. Dave Koechner, November 1st through the 3rd. Brad Williams, November 8th through the 10th. Jimmy Schubert, November 15th through the 17th. And then Thanksgiving Eve, we have Dr. Dirty John Valby. Robert Kelly's going to be here November 23rd and 24th. Carlos Mencia, November 29th through December 1st. And the Pitbull of Comedy is back. Bobby Slayton, December 6th through the 9th. If you're interested and you want to check out a show, very simple. Visit CarlsonComedy.com or call 585-4-COMEDY. Hope to see you at a show sometime. Hey everybody, don't forget to watch us live Friday mornings on Facebook Live and YouTube. And if you wouldn't mind, give us a follow on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. If you just want to listen to the show, you can check us out on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And you might want to check out this little neat app that just came out. You might have heard of it. It's called Laughable. It's pretty incredible. If you haven't seen it yet, it's a great way to connect you and your favorite comedians. And if you forgot everything I just said, visit us at carlsoncast.com.
Hey, everybody. We are back. Thank you for staying with us. I'd like to welcome into studio our special guest. You may know her from Girl Code. You may know her from Crashing. You may have seen her special, I Mean. Here she is. It's Jamie Lee, everybody. We are very happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you. Thank
yes.
you.
Thank you.
56 episodes in, finally someone says that. Can you believe it, guys? I like it when we start like this. Jamie Lee is going to be doing four shows here at Comedy at the Carlson this weekend, two tonight, two tomorrow. If you'd like to get your tickets, visit carlsoncomedy.com or call 585-4-COMEDY. And we're going to jump right into an interview because I have two pages of notes.
Oh, my God.
Yes, I did not stalk you, but I stalked you to get ready to have a conversation
Thank
with you.
I consider that just good old-fashioned preparation.
I do, too.
It's not stalking if it's for work.
No, exactly.
Yeah. Right, right.
It's research.
Now, let's start at the beginning.
Oh, God.
Dallas, Texas.
Yes, that is where I'm from.
nothing about you screams Texas.
Really?
I don't know. I didn't. I don't get the accent.
The accent's not there. Yeah. I think I worked kind of hard to not have an accent.
Right. So you were born and raised in Dallas.
Yes. And my dad's from Texas and my mom is from New Jersey. My dad straight up sounds like King of the Hill. He's like, oh, Jamie. Well.
So you grew up in Dallas.
Yeah.
How long did you live there?
I lived there until college. Then I went to school in Texas. I went to the University of Texas in Austin. And then I moved to New York right after college. So I actually think the reason I don't have an accent is because I lived in New York for like 10 years.
Interesting.
And I think at a certain point, you just kind of start to combat what you grew up with.
Yeah, that's
a
the complete
bit.
Opposite of Texas accent. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like when I noticed the shift was when I stopped saying orange and I started saying orange, and I was like, oh, whoa, that's like very New York to say orange.
That's an interesting catch too.
Yeah,
I don't think I would have even picked
that
up.
That was when it dawned on me. I was like, I used to say orange, but now I'm an orange person.
Weird.
Which makes me sound like Donald Trump.
Are you a soda or pop or Coke person?
No, soda.
Yeah.
Yeah, pop I think is just Midwest, right?
No, up here it's 50-50.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And down south, everything is a Coke.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Southeastern.
Maybe. Oh, maybe I did say Coke.
Yeah, I think Texas says Coke all
the
time.
Yeah, shit. I guess I said that.
Huh. Well, this is fascinating. I'd like to know.
Really getting to my roots here.
Yeah.
By the way, this show is just about linguistics. That's
yeah,
all we
I
talk
know.
About.
Just, I love it.
Yeah.
It's so educational.
Well, like, coming up in Texas, people don't realize that Texas does have, Dallas in particular, has a really good comedy scene. They have some good clubs. And
yes, Dallas has great clubs. Yeah, it's an interesting comedy scene. I started in New York,
right.
But when I went back to Dallas, I kind of was like, I didn't feel, I was like, oh, I didn't start here, so I don't feel like, just because I grew up here, I'm allowed to, like,
just
partake.
Come in.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, but the one thing that was kind of an adjustment was that I was like, oh, this will be easy. Like, you know, I'm from here. I can do spots when I'm in town. But actually, there's a lot of, like, clean comedy rooms in Dallas. And that the clubs are normal. It's, you know, do whatever you do. But
so you're telling me, like, the
clean comedy was hard because in New York, no one does clean comedy. Like, even when we're not swearing, the subject matter is still, like, edgy or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was really surprised the first time I did stand up in Dallas. I was like, oh, I guess I'm, like, blue.
So
I didn't know that.
So you're telling me, like, I mean, we would call it the underground scene of comedy because it's not like the main clubs and stuff like that.
Right.
It's like clean in Dallas.
Yes.
They're just all doing clean comedy.
Yes, I did a show where they told me in advance. They were like, this is a clean room. And I was like, no problem. I will not swear at all. And then I did a joke about abortion, but it was more of a wordplay. It wasn't like I was had a hot take or anything. It was just kind of a throwaway one-liner, and I got pulled aside afterwards, and they
too
were like,
close to the
absolutely
edge.
No. You cannot say abortion. And it was crazy because the guy who went up before me, I remember this, he did a whole rant about the size of his dick. I remember it, and I was like, wait, because I had just gotten the note, like, be clean, and I was like, but this guy's doing a lot of dick material. Is dick not dirty? I guess I don't know what the standards are. Yes, depends on the dick.
Yeah.
But right. I was like, I don't know. I guess. And then I think that's why I did my joke, because I was like, oh, that guy just did all that. And of course, they didn't say anything to him, and then they pulled me aside.
Is it because he's, do you think it's because he's part of the scene, or just because dick jokes are just such a part of comedy that nobody even thinks about it?
I just was like, what constitutes clean versus dirty? Like, I don't understand.
There's no rhyme or reason. I've been toiling over that question for a long time myself.
Yeah.
And it's all comes down to, at the very end of the day, the personal preferences of whoever's sitting in the audience.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, some stuff is like, just, you know, it's not even up for debate. It's clearly like, wow, you're really going there.
Uh-huh, but, 100%.
But, yeah, I don't know.
Some people just think, oh, I had to think for a minute. That's dirty.
Right.
I had to use my brain.
Or if it's like a little, like, if you mention like depression or like anything that's just not like rosy sunshine, people are like, yikes, they're really pushing the limits.
In this day and age, even like alluding to or putting the thought in someone's head, like the way it used to be, like not saying something dirty, but just painting the picture to get to it. Mm-hmm. Even doing that is crossing lines.
Right. That's just implying now.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, your implication was dirty.
So what's so funny about this terrible topic? It's a weird
Lots
business, everybody.
Yeah.
It's a weird business.
Also,
don't do it.
You can't make everybody happy. You just have to do what matters to you. And then you'll have some audiences that'll be on board and some that won't.
Solid advice. That's actually very accurate. Very,
There's
very
only
accurate.
So much you can control.
100%. So growing up in Dallas, how did you first get exposed to stand-up? Like
HBO.
HBO?
Yeah.
Who were you watching? Do you remember?
Yes. There were two stand-up specials that really changed me. The first one was Margaret Cho. I forget the name of the special, but I think it's Hello, My Name is Gwen. That might have been the name of the tour. I don't know if that's the name of the special.
I didn't think that was the name of one of the specials. I'm trying to remember myself now.
Hello, My Name is Gwen was definitely the name of the tour. Because I saw the special and then I went to see her live at the Majestic Theater when she came to Dallas when I was either 13 or 14 years old.
Your parents took you to see her when you were 14?
Yeah, she was really filthy and I was with my mom and I was like, all right, well, I guess this is just sort of like a bonding situation with me and my mom.
Amazing!
Yeah, my parents were always pretty, like, they were fine with, like, swearing. They didn't love, like, sex stuff, like, in movies.
Right.
But as far as just, like, bad words went, they were like, whatever. She's going to hear him eventually.
Really?
Yeah. So my mom took me to see her. And then that was my first live stand-up show that I ever went to.
Well, your mom's from Jersey, too. So she's just like...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Probably a lot
cooler. My mom has a much filthier mouth than I do. Not a joke. She's, like, filthy.
I love that.
And then after that, the special that really got me was David Cross had a half hour on HBO, and my mom and I watched that together, and I was like, who is this man? He's like the funniest person I've ever seen in my life. And then when I got to college my freshman year, one of my friends, she wasn't my friend at the time, but we talked about that special, and I was like, you saw that special? She was like, oh my God, it's the funniest thing I've seen. He's like, I saw that special. And now she's like one of my best friends. It totally brought us together.
It was a transformative moment.
Literally. I've never laughed harder. It was so funny.
Was it that first one that he had?
Yeah, it was his first half hour.
Is that the one before really the Mr. Good. Show or while he was still doing the Mr.
Show? I
think
it was right before. I never saw Mr. Show until I was in college.
Right. But I knew that special helped him get
probably
the show.
They
I
do
thought.
That. They even do that now, like with Crashing. Pete is taping an hour, or he taped an hour, and then Crashing aired. So like they do stand-up specials and
these contracts forcing him to do a stand-up special.
But
oh
it is
my
cool
goodness!
How they like it's cool that they promote their comedians across all platforms.
Well, HBO's
like
got it down.
Yeah,
I mean, they're
the
real originators.
They know
like
their shit.
You're in with a good crew there.
Yeah.
You're in with a pretty good crew.
Yeah. I trust them.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing.
It's really, I couldn't imagine it being hard to not trust HBO. I'm sure that there's things about them that at times questionable with any network, but.
They're pretty solid.
Good hands.
Yeah.
Good hands.
I feel like they know what they're doing.
The Emmys are kind of just the HBO awards.
Yeah. It's really crazy. They clean up pretty hard.
Yeah.
Well, you know. They do good work.
They do.
When you do good work, you get rewarded for it.
Home box office. Thank you.
Now, let's talk about writing.
Yeah.
You've written books. You're writing, currently writing a movie, correct? Or did you write a movie?
I wrote a movie.
You wrote a movie?
Yeah.
Forgive me for not being
that thing. No. Oh, please. I mean, it's still in the phase of, like, there's probably going to be another draft, but.
Sure.
Yeah. It's at least three drafts deep.
Right.
At the moment.
Yeah,
so
that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
It's safe to say like your entertainment career started kind of in the stand-up
mentality. Yes, 100%. I started in stand-up. That's
right.
Like my bread and butter. Yeah.
So like when did you first start doing stand-up?
I started after college. I was working in comedy PR.
Mm-hmm.
And through that job, I had to learn about a lot of comedians, like mm-hmm. up-and-coming comedians in the New York stand-up scene.
Sure.
And I would say about 6 months into the job, I kind of had an aha moment when I was watching I don't remember whose stand-up special it was, but I was watching a stand-up special for work, just familiarizing myself. Mm-hmm. And I remember on my lunch break after watching it, I called my dad and I was like, I think I want to do stand-up. And he's very supportive.
He's
like, oh, Jamie. Well, yeah, you got to follow your heart, you know? And I was like, all right, Dad. My parents, like, don't push back at all any idea I have. My mom does, but my dad's, like, just, like, a little too supportive. but he was like, you should go for it. And then I think I signed up for a stand-up comedy class, like, a week later.
Interesting.
And that was through Caroline's.
So you took
on Broadway.
Through Caroline's.
Yeah.
So you did a class before you actually stepped on stage.
Yes. Well, you technically step on stage during the class because you have to perform for your classmates every week. But, I did my first open mic during the class, during the time I was in the class. So probably, like, 2 weeks into the class, I went to an open mic.
So comedy classes.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
It's, you know, I wouldn't say it helps so much with writing. It just helps with your courage. I think that you learn to be better at writing maybe as you go. But it does help you just, like, get up in front of people for the first time, which I think is hard. Even if you don't have stage fright, I think that initial, like, talking in front of an audience is pretty daunting. So it was good to be able to test it out.
I would say it's also pretty nice to have someone who could help guide you to even know what the to walk into an open mic and know how to sign up, how what the light is and how all that stuff works. To just kind of have a basic knowledge before you do it is probably pretty helpful.
It's interesting. The class actually discouraged us from going to open mics, and I never understood that to this day.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, is it because they do bringer shows at Caroline's and they want us to only do those because that makes them money?
I'm going
to
guess 100%.
Yeah, I don't know. But I remember them saying, don't do open mics, and I was like, why? Why wouldn't I? They're free. Like, I'm going to do the free thing. I'm 24
first
like
time,
so I did that, and you know, open mics in New York, some of them are great, some of them are pretty brutal. The one I went to for the first time was really brutal.
Right.
I didn't go on until like 1:30 in the morning, and I'd work the next day. It was really crazy.
How'd you do?
Fine.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, I did fine, and I think that that was kind of the thing that kept me going, is that I was never bad. I was never bad. I mean,
that's beautiful,
when I was bad, I was bad. Of course, if you saw my set, you'd be like, yikes. But comparatively, I never bombed.
Right.
I mean, I bombed later.
Sure.
But not in those like early days of just like unabashed confidence that you have to have. You have to be like delusionally.
Correct.
Delusionally confident.
Yeah, no sane person would do that.
Right, exactly, which is what you have. And then you start to get broken down over the years. Knock down a peg, and you sort of start to check yourself.
Right.
But initially, you're like, I'm amazing. I'm here, you know?
It's like boot camp. It tears you down and then builds you back up
exactly.
again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I feel like there's a couple ways it goes. Like, the first time people do comedy, it either goes, they bring a lot of friends, goes really well.
Yeah.
They all get cheered, and they are now officially a comedian now and forever time. They have put the stamp on themselves. Facebook changed the next morning. Comedian so-and-so.
Right.
Eyes roll in the back of my head. I want to throw up all over the desk when I see these things. Most people do. But, like, people go that way. Or they do just well enough to get it in their veins that it becomes, like, almost a weird obsession where it's like, okay, I'm in this now and I'm really going for it and I'm going to get better.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's also the camp of people who are fucking terrible. Like, they were so bad when they started. Like, to the point where, like, literally, like, oh, if that person goes on stage, I can't even watch. And now they're some of the funniest people I've ever seen.
It's true. Like, I used to be of the mind you just can't learn it. Like, I used to think, you got to have something going
on.
You
can totally learn it.
And I realized over time I was very wrong. I was very wrong in my thinking there. Because I've watched a couple. I've seen a couple people get remarkably better from when they started.
Yeah, well, I think that it puts a fire under them. Because they're like, if I really want to do this, I have to, like, learn the game. I have to, like, figure out this. I think you can study comedy to a degree where you kind of, like, figure out the science behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there's, but there are also people who just naturally have it from the beginning. I don't know. I think that there's every possibility. It's all possible. You can be total garbage and get way better. You can also be good from the beginning and continue to be good.
Or you could suck from the start and suck to the end. It
absolutely.
Could be the same thing.
Absolutely.
But,
lots of those. Yeah.
I mean, I think your particular, your style is fantastic.
Thank
I enjoy
you.
Very much the,
so nice.
Well, no, I've been watching you all week and I've enjoyed it. There's occasions when it's a bit of a chore.
Oh, well, I'm glad that I'm not a chore.
You are not a chore at all.
No, not at all.
Not even a little bit. I wanted to commend you on a couple of things that I liked. I liked
get
your,
into
it.
Start commending.
Let's get it going. I'm going to start off with that. I'm going to start off with this beautiful, beautiful fleece.
Okay.
I'd like to start with that.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
Patagonia.
It's vintage
Patagonia.
Gorgeous. It's from Tokyo.
But the way you I love your confidence. I love the way you start shows off. I always like your opening lines.
Oh,
you, the one I saw on Pete Holmes' show where you came out and you commented on the necklace you were wearing.
Oh, yeah.
It felt so off
that
the cuff.
That was very funny.
But it just...
was kind of.
I wanted to ask you that because, like,
yeah, because I had not worn that necklace before.
I'm getting back out there.
Oh yeah, what was it? I don't remember what I said.
I look like the fun aunt.
Oh yeah,
it
was
just great.
Yeah, no, I definitely felt that when I was wearing that
out of
statement piece, if you will.
out of the gate, just a right hook. I loved it. And I enjoy that. I enjoy that.
It was a very accurate description.
Thank you. Yeah, it's such a ridiculous outfit.
And that one little thing, I'm glad that you told me that it was kind of like, it was like a, kind of an off-the-cuff thing. Yeah. Because when people go to do TV, they don't have, a lot of people don't have the wits about that about them.
Yeah. Well, I also wrote on that show, so I think I felt very at home.
Sure.
When I did that set, I felt kind of cozy.
Oh, we're getting there. We're going to get to your writing.
Sorry to skip to the...
But I thought all your late night appearances especially, like you nail the late night appearances.
Thanks.
So a lot of guys in you know, comedians, you can see like that they're not used to doing these short, clean sets.
I mean,
and I know that's not normally your style, but yeah, when you would come out and do that, it seemed like you do it all the time.
Well, I think in the beginning it was really easy for me because all of my jokes were pretty short and economical. Mm-hmm. So I think like when they were like, "Oh, you only have 5 minutes," I was like, "Only? Like I can fill that easily. That's like the perfect amount of time."
Yeah.
But now I think I do, just from doing more headlining shows, you know, have to build up time. You can't just do 5 minutes. Like, you need to actually have, like, a point of view and things you care about, and, so.
It's amazing how difficult it is to stretch 5 minutes into 45 to an hour.
Oh, yeah. When I was first headlining, I was like, I don't know how to do this. I only do, like, jokes that would be good for late night really quick, and... Yeah. Yeah, I was just very writerly in that way, I guess. And, like, yeah, I think that's great for 5 minutes on television, but no one wants to watch an hour of that. Like, you have to come up with some substance.
Yeah.
So.
So, when I guess I alluded to it a little bit. We've talked about your writing.
Yeah.
And when you were coming up, you know, just starting off out of college, did you want to, like, write, or did you just want to do stand-up, or was writing... I mean, they're not mutually exclusive of each other.
No, I know what you're saying. Yeah, Well, my whole life, I was always really into writing. It was the one thing in school I never felt like was taxing or exhausting. I was always excited to do it, and then...
Lunch for me.
It was always the thing that came easy to me, and so I think that if I didn't write, it would just be like this weird thing that I feel good at, but I wouldn't pursue. So I think it's kind of, it's great that you can be a stand-up and be a writer, and stand-up is writing and performing. It's like literally the answer to everything I want to do.
It really is.
It really is. I mean, all I wanted to do was like, and before I even, with stand-up, before I knew that stand-up was like a possible career path, I was like, oh, I really want to be in like, I want to be in theater classes, and I want to do plays. And then I was like, but I also love writing. Like, I didn't even know there was one thing that would sum up all of that for me.
Right.
And then when I found stand-up, I was like, oh, thank God. This is, like, the answer to everything. I want to be performing, and I want to be writing. And now I'm sort of in a different phase of performing and writing because I'm an actor on a show, but I also write, like, I write narrative television.
Right.
So, yeah, it's kind of taken on a new form.
I'm a writer in my day job, not doing stand-up and stuff, but the one thing I've found is doing stand-up is, as a writer, is do you find sometimes you get a little married to your words? Like,
you're very
proud of this sentence that you wrote, and it's a beautiful sentence, but the crowd doesn't give a rat's ass about
and,
it.
And I've gotten a lot better about, like, not being married to my words, which has really chilled me out.
Yeah, that took
tremendously.
Me a long time just to stop.
Yeah, and I think I used to be so meticulous. Like, I would, my whole, like, process or whatever, I would, like, go to Starbucks with a notebook and I would write down jokes, like, write them out. And I got really heady about it, and it made them way less funny. And now I just, like, take a bullet point and talk about it.
Yeah.
And it's been, it's, like, such a easier process for me.
Yeah, I find it's much better not to write stuff out anymore.
Yeah, I think you find the words... The whole thing I remember from my Caroline's on Broadway comedy class, I remember they said stand-up should be like you're just being funny with your friend. You're making your friend laugh. And I'm like, sometimes I forget that. Like, you're just talking to people. Like, there's not this whole thing of, like, a fourth wall. Like, there kind of isn't one with stand-up, but because we're on stage...
Unless
like,
you choose to put one there.
Yeah, but you're literally, like, physically elevated on a stage, and you're talking into a mic. Everyone has to listen to you. Like, there's this power where it feels like it's more than just talking to people, but really it's just talking to people.
Yeah. So there's way less pretense in it than people realize.
Yeah, and it's easy to kind of get lost in, like, the authority you have, but really if you can kind of strip that away and realize, like, you're literally just having a conversation I think that you realize comedy actually can be a little easier than you might be making it. I think I made it really hard in the beginning for myself.
Yeah, so
I made it way harder.
I like when you go to a new place that doesn't have comedy, like, well, what do you need? What do you mean? Like, I need a microphone.
Literally nothing.
Yeah. It's just
some hummus.
That wall over there.
Yeah.
I'll stand over by that.
Yeah.
And exactly. You got a way to project my voice? We're good.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. So you started writing for television when? Like, how long were you doing stand-up before you got your first TV writing?
I was doing stand-up about four years before I started writing for TV. I was a writer's assistant, and then I started writing on the Pete Holmes Show, where I mostly was in charge of, like, monologue jokes.
Uh-huh.
And Pete had a very specific style of monologue. He wanted it to feel kind of like broad stand-up,
right?
On a particular topic. So it was really evergreen. There was no, like, politics or current events. It was just like, here's a monologue about coffee, you know? And so it was actually a really great challenge because I was writing just pure stand-up, multiple times a week.
Now,
that sounds great. Don't do topics.
Yeah.
It sounds amazing. It sounds like the most amazing, like, just for yourself to get you into a headspace of writing jokes. Now, you're writing them for somebody else. That's the one thing that would drive me nuts about working on a show like Crashing and stuff like that, where you have to write funny stand-up jokes for people.
Yeah.
And now they're on television. Nobody could ever do them again.
Yeah, I mean, I think the good thing, though, writing for Pete is I think we have... Pete and I have a really similar sense of humor, and I really understand his sense of humor, so it actually is, like, pretty, I wouldn't say easy, because writing comedy is not necessarily easy, but I think that it was easier, because I at least, like, knew what he would find funny.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you two have, like, kind of an interesting relationship. You were slightly more than friends for a while.
We were. We started out, when I met him, we started dating,
uh-huh.
and we were together for, like, a little under a year, and then broke up. Kind of didn't talk for a minute, and then something kind of crazy happened, because when we were together, we wrote this show together called Kid Farm, which was a parody of 19 Kids and Counting, and it was an idea we came up with, and we shot a pilot at my aunt's house, and it was just this, like, fun thing we wanted to make.
Kids Farm. Was it Kids just
Farm,
like kids
yeah.
slaving away in a farm?
No. Have you seen 19 Kids and Counting?
I know what it is.
It's
I've
a show where this family, they have 19 children, and they're, like, really, like, they're called Quiverful, which is, like, a specific sect of evangelical Christian, and they just believe, like, the more kids you have, the closer
Quiverful?
You get to yeah, the that closer you get to God, and it's and they live, like, in a rural part of Arkansas, and
I can imagine the type of drills they have to have for all 19 kids.
It's really, like,
you've said
fascinating
nothing good
to watch.
In your last few sentences.
so we made a parody of that, and then nothing really happened with it. We just made this pilot, and then a couple months after we broke up, we found out that the pilot was picked up to series on ComedyCentral.com. I don't know why I said it like that. I should have said Comedy Central's website, but
sure.
ComedyCentral.com.
Could you put the www in front?
HTTP.
Thank you. Forward slash.
Yeah. So it was kind of this weird thing where we had to work together. And we hadn't really spoken, and it was really interesting because when we went to film more episodes for that web series, we kind of just hit it off as friends again right away. It was really interesting. Like, we both kind of had a very good, and not like it was such a tumultuous ending to our relationship, but it is interesting that we were able to pick up as friends very naturally,
and
with no real closure, no real dialogue, just kind of like, we're working together now.
What year is this?
This was probably in 2010 or 11.
Okay.
Probably 2010.
And you two are still working together and friends to 2018.
Yeah, and so then our director of that series, Oren Brimmer, is also a producer on Crashing. So we've all kind of worked together for years now. It's just been very natural.
Got a whole
Pete
crew
and I became
going.
Buds again, and it was just great. Yeah, and we started, like, hanging out, and I was like, oh, this is, like, my buddy. Like, we were meant to just be friends and colleagues this whole time. Like,
it's
kind of
that's
crazy.
A wonderful thing, actually.
It's amazing. Yeah.
In this world full of cynicism and awfulness, it's great that people can not just write each other off and never just talk to them again.
And at least
after a relationship ends.
You were married for 13 years before you realized, oh, I just want to be friends with this person.
Right. Yeah, no. It's really interesting, too. Like, I feel like when I tell people, like, oh, yeah, we used to date, now we work together, it's like, to me, it's not that surprising, because I think, like, I think it's normal when you meet someone that you have a connection with, especially when you're single and in your 20s, to be like, we should probably be boyfriend, girlfriend. Like, it just, I think your mind sort of goes there, and then you realize that that's not necessarily the case. Like, you might actually be better suited as friends.
Yeah.
But it does make sense that you would want to try dating, because if you get along with someone that well and you're so, like, connected comedically, it just logically seems like, oh, yeah, like, well, that's probably my boyfriend. He should probably be my boyfriend. And then you realize, like, no, you guys are compatible on a different level, which you'll figure out at a later date, which is what happened.
But get it all out now. Just get it all out now.
Yeah, we got it all out.
But you did find somebody. You just got married, right?
Yeah. Well, I've been with my husband. We've been together a really long time. But, yeah, we got married fairly recently. And, It's great.
You survived all that wedding crap without a...
Yeah, I mean, it was not an easy time. I don't know if I would do it again. I would get married again, but I wouldn't necessarily do a big wedding again.
Yeah. Most people, like, they go through that first one, and then the next one is, like, justice of the peace.
They're literally like, well, we're not getting off our couch. Kevin's backyard. Yeah, exactly.
We're
going
to have a barbecue.
They're like, let's just do it with, like, the game on in the background. Like, they don't...
All of my weddings were huge blowouts, so...
All of them? Yeah. How many were there?
Three?
Yeah. How old are you?
43. First one doesn't count. We don't need to get into all that.
Okay. 3 weddings. Wow.
If only there was a funeral in there, too.
Oh, my God.
There almost was a couple times.
Well, not enough if you ask me.
Did you get married in New York or go back to...
In L.A. We live in L.A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we live in L.A., but we shoot in New York, so we spend a lot of time in New York for crashing.
Is it all right to ask how Artie's doing?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is I don't know.
Great.
I never know. He's back this season.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to say.
Okay.
I never know.
We could leave it at that. I'm just curious.
He's the nicest, friendliest man, and he's like a dream to work with. And he holds it together so well when you're talking to him that it's impossible to know what's going on behind closed doors.
Seems to be his MO.
Yeah.
God bless him. I hope he's okay. I mean,
I love him.
I do too.
He's the greatest guy. Yeah.
He was scheduled to be here. He was coming to do this club. And
really?
Yeah, he didn't do the date. So.
Oh, no.
There was just stuff going on. And so I'm hoping that he's okay, because I got to see that guy live at some point in my life. I have to see his set.
He's such a dream.
I have to see his set. I really do. So. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that, you know, he's going to be back on the show. That's positive.
He is back on the show, yeah.
That's positive.
Yeah, he's back this season for sure.
Yeah. Cool. So, writing to acting now.
Yeah.
That's another weird jump. Not really, but it is. It's different.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah. Yes, it was very surprising to me. It was surprising. I did not think that I would be... I thought that I would maybe eventually have a part on the show in some capacity.
Sure.
I had actually written, when we were writing the second season, I wrote a small part for myself, hoping that I would even get it. I mean, we still have to... You have to audition. It's not like just because you write on the show, you immediately get to be on camera. That's, like, not how it works.
Sounds like a power trip there, Pete Holmes.
Just throwing that out there. But, I mean, just in general, it's like there's so
much... Oh, Jamie, this is a really funny part. I wrote it for me.
Yeah, but I mean, I could see them if they got, like, because they're trying to promote the show, if they got, like, a big actor to do it, you know, like.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, so I wrote this smaller part, hoping that I would play her. It got cut down to one scene, and I was like, you know what? One scene is, that would be great. Like, I haven't done any real acting. I've done, like, sketch acting on, like, Girl Code and stuff, but I was like, oh, I haven't really, like, booked a thing yet.
Yeah.
So then I found out I was going to be able to audition for the lead season 2, and I think because I wasn't, I didn't think I would get it, so I think I went in just kind of being like, whatever, we'll just see what happens, and I ended up having a really good audition, but even then I was like, they're auditioning so many people, so many funny people. They're
auditioning famous people. Who'd you be?
I don't know if I can say, but I knew they were seeing.
Can you throw out initials?
No.
Was it Sandra Bullock?
Yes, it was. It was down to me and Sandra. But yeah, I didn't think anything of it, and I hadn't heard anything for like a couple weeks, and I was just like, this is weird, because I was already in New York for the writing portion, which was wrapping up in like a week. and I was about to go back to LA. So I was like, it's weird that if I am acting in this thing, no one's talked to me about it. So I got in my head that no one's talked to me about it because they know I didn't get it, and they feel too awkward to broach it with me. Because I was walking around the office like our last day of writing. I was walking around the office and I was like, no one's talking to me.
Do we know who's played Ellie yet?
Yeah, I was like, everyone's being weird. And I was like, this is because they don't want to let me down and they feel really bad. And then I was texting my manager and I was like, what the hell is going on? I don't understand. Pete wasn't in the office. He was out of town doing shows. And so I was just like, this is insane. And then 30 minutes later, my manager texted me back. Oh, no, wait. I skipped a step. Pete texted me saying, I want to go to dinner when I get back. And I was like, why does he want to go to dinner? It's because he wants to let me down easy. And I was like so stressed out. I was like, if he wants to let me down, he should just pull the Band-Aid off. Like, it's not a big deal. I can handle it. I assume someone else got the part. And then, yeah, 30 minutes after that, text came in. My manager texted me, I think you're really going to enjoy that dinner. And I dropped my phone on the ground and like lost it. I just started crying. I was like, this is insane. And then everyone heard me crying and they walked in. They're like, we knew. We didn't want to tell you.
You're kidding me.
Because Pete told us not to tell you. Yeah, it was like this huge moment. And I was just like, I can't believe it. You guys were all being so weird. And yeah, and then I had to go back to LA, get my dog, pack up my stuff, and then move to New York for the summer to film. It was crazy.
But that's such like a good surprise.
It was so crazy. It was the best surprise. It's maybe the best. It is the best surprise.
Like, I'm actually like sitting here very happy
for
you.
It's very emotional. It was really emotional. Yeah. It was crazy. Because it's just like, you audition for so many things, and like, before I got the part, I was starting to get really close to booking things.
Uh-huh.
So I was getting that kind of confidence where I'm like, okay, like, I know I can act. Like, I'm starting to kind of get some traction. I'm getting callbacks. Like, something's bubbling beneath the surface. But it can bubble for a really long time, and you don't necessarily land a part. Yeah. So when it actually happens, you're just like, oh, that's what it feels like. Like, that's crazy. And it was such a special part to me. Like, it's about a stand-up comedian who's dating a comedian, you know, but
and
also...
you're very good in it.
Oh, thank you.
And
really nice.
And, you know, I say a lot of nice things to our guests, but there's a scene in there, and I'll tell you guys to watch this, and if you want to argue with me... on this, go watch it first. There's a scene on, I believe, that first episode where you two are going through New York, and you two are sitting on the train, subway, and you're telling a story about your dad in the show and his ponytail and stuff like that. And it's wonderful.
Aww.
It's just like this nice little scene, and they're flirty, and they have chemistry. And I don't know how much of that is relationship and being friends and stuff like that, but it is... really just good. It's good,
you.
And you can't argue with it.
Thanks.
So
go watch it.
I love
go
that
watch
episode.
It.
Yeah, that episode's really special.
It is. It's like very, it's like, you know, I've never dated a comedian. My wife isn't into comedy as much, you know. So, like, I couldn't imagine, like, being around somebody that funny and, like, seeing sparks fly like that. So I'm watching this going, this is really crazy and bizarre to me. But it's so heart-wrenching and nice. And
yeah. Oh, I'm so glad. They almost cut that scene out, so I'm really glad
you
it
made me
in.
Feel yeah, something.
Aw, yay. Yay. That's all I
You thought his cold black heart.
Turns out it was a mini stroke. But it was a great scene. It was just a great scene.
Now, have you found that acting now, has that changed your writing style at all? Like, having a bit more sympathy for the people whose mouths you're putting words into?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I don't think
Brian, that was a good question.
Yeah, that's a great question. You. I don't know if I've ever thought of it the way that you just phrased it, but I guess subconsciously, yes, that definitely is happening. Also, I think that, you know, it's an interesting time to be a writer and an actor who's acting the things that are written for the it's very complicated. I'm like, this is so meta because I write for the thing that I act. But I think it's a tough time this season particularly. I think, you know, we want to touch on some subject matters that, like, you know, might stir up a little bit of controversy. And I think it's like everyone's just trying to approach it in the most sensitive way, and it's really hard to talk about it without.
Don't go into specifics, but I have a pretty good guess into the direction that we're
heading.
We
have an episode in particular that I think this season is like we're really trying to sort of touch on, sort of like misogyny in the comedy community and sort of what that looks like and how. Yeah,
it's amazing. It's my next question.
It's just a tough time. You know, everyone wants to kind of represent all angles and. you know, we're all just human beings trying to do the best job that we can. So it can be tough.
I think you get in as much trouble for just trying to be over representative of other people that you do if you're underrepresented people.
That is a great point.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's 100% right.
I'm with you.
You kind of can't win.
I'm with you. It's like be a person. Be a person and treat everyone with respect.
If you don't talk about things, you're soft. And if you talk too much about things, people hate you. It's like, I don't know. I think we're all just trying.
Yeah.
It feels like comedy's changing a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last, not even 2 years, it seems like. It's just
how about the last 6 months on Netflix?
I will say, I was just in San Francisco, which is arguably like the most politically correct city in one of them in the U.S. Like,
I won't argue with them. They could have it.
Yeah, very, very, very woke. Very, yeah. And I mean, it's interesting because I feel like I was really nervous to perform there, and then it was like, no, they were wonderful. Like, they totally get it, and I think that like it's kind of comforting to be like, oh, I can do like satire about the times we're living in, and like. You can tell I'm clearly on like the right side of things. Like I'm a good person and I'm progressive.
It's cool.
And, like,
she's with us.
Yeah. And like, it's just nice when you go to a city where you don't feel like you have to walk on eggshells, even though you would assume that would be the city where you do have to walk on eggshells. But really where you end up walking on eggshells is like small towns in the middle of the country.
Or open mics in Dallas.
Yes. Or open mics in Dallas.
Yeah. So I read a couple interviews that you gave. And you did refer to comedy as a bit of a boys' club.
Mm.
And you're not the first person to say that. And I don't think that you're wrong there at all. I couldn't argue with that if I wanted to.
Uh-huh.
I guess I'm just more interested in two things.
Sure.
Your opinion on why do you think it's so hard for male comics to be accepting of female comics? What do you think? Where does that come from?
Mm.
I mean, do you have thoughts on that?
I do. I don't know if they're organized, though.
Okay.
I mean, I think that a lot of it, I think that some of it is just general, like, power dynamics of how men and women interact and how men typically are, like, more dominant. And then you get into a role of stand-up, which is naturally dominant, and you see a woman doing it, and you're just kind of like, something ain't right. I think there's
that lady using that microphone.
I mean, honestly, I know it sounds like oversimplified and like I'm kind of making fun, but I do think there's something like primitive and primal in men's brains where they're just like, hold on now, that's my thing.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of it's genetic.
Yeah,
you know, it's just,
exactly. And yeah. I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is I don't even think it's like, I don't think it's conscious. And if it is conscious, like,
grow up.
Yeah, I don't think it's conscious, though. I think that sometimes it can be. Sometimes it's very overt. But, you know, also it's just like the history of comedy. Like, there weren't as many women. It was male-dominated. Men were the ones giving the jobs, and they would give those jobs to their friends, typically white male friends. That's just true. I mean, like, if you read any comedy books, like, they're all white men, like, until, you know, with, like, a pop of Eddie Murphy. You know, you're just like, oh, okay.
And all their heroes were white men.
Or a pop of Richard Pryor, and you're just like, okay, like, And I think that we've evolved a lot. We still have more work to do, but it's the fact that we're having the discussions that we're having. I think that's like where change starts.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this question, and I don't expect anybody to have like an actual answer to this, but you know, it's something that I do think about. How can male comics be better and more accepting? I mean, are there tangible steps that people can take?
I can speak. One thing I feel really strongly about is if you are in a writer's room, if you're in a comedy writer's room, no matter what you think, no matter who you think is the funniest person, they deserve to be hired over this other person, you have to hire diverse. And there are many reasons for this. The main reason, beyond like looking good or whatever to the outside and being like, we represent.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing is that you do not need multiple degrees of the same perspective, because that will actually make your show worse. Even if you're like, for example, you have like your white friend who you're like, oh, but they're the funniest person. That's great. You should definitely hire them. But you also have to hire people of color, people from different sex backgrounds, gender backgrounds, It literally will make your show better just to have someone for the, even if it's not joke wise, to have someone, you say an idea as a white person, and to have another person in there being like, actually, that is not funny for this, this, and this reason to me. That alone is like, you, that is so valuable. You're not the only, you're not the only perspective in the world. So there's no reason why you should be the only perspective on a TV show that is going to go out to the world.
And you know, one of the things people don't realize about a writing room in particular is you're there to sharpen each other's ideas too. You're there to help.
Yeah, and you also, I think that you also want to, I think comedy, I would say 90% of what makes comedy good is communicating effectively, and the only way you're going to effectively communicate is if you are making sure that your bases are covered and that you are not just speaking from your own voice. It has to have it, even if it's through you, if you're the star of your own show, there has to be other perspectives filtered through you, because people need to feel represented. Even if you can't represent them because you don't have the same skin color, the same, you know, religious background, sexual background, whatever it is, you still need to be clued in, because you're not the only person.
Ideally, you want everyone to watch it. So
yeah, and it's not like every show is going to appeal to every person. There are plenty of shows that I don't watch because I'm like, I'm just not interested.
Sure.
But I think that you should want to include as many perspectives as possible when you're trying to achieve the goal of making a TV show.
And you know, that's when it gets down to it, I would sum up saying something like, you know, you, it may be your show, but you're not the only person who watches
exactly. it. Exactly. That's the main thing.
The audience is, you know, you want as many people to enjoy it and get something out of it as possible.
You also can't possibly know. You are only one person. You're only one brain. You can't possibly, it's not even your job to understand everybody. Like, you're literally one perspective, just like everyone else is one perspective. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that's why a writer's room is such a great thing, is that you can have a bunch of different people generating ideas, and it's really, to me, really comforting to be like, oh, I never thought about anything that way because my experience has been this, this, and this. But to have, it's just invaluable to have someone who has a completely different story than you do be like, well, that joke is really fucking unfunny, and I'll tell you why. And you're like, oh, well, I'm not more point of view is not more valid than that, and their point of view. And it's like, just the fact that there's a discourse being had is like, you just need it, like, to improve your product.
And you know, nobody has ever written a perfect first script of anything.
No. I think that I wish that there were writer's rooms just for like stand up. I wish I could have like 10 different types of people helping me create a thing. But I mean, that's kind of, stand-up is like the one art form where it's like, it's just you.
You need to become the host of The Daily Show, and you will have it.
You'll be just fine. Exactly.
But Jamie Lee, one last question for you. I'm going to get you out of here. We ask this of all of our guests because we pride ourselves on having a pretty big following of folks who are just learning about stand-up, maybe toying with the notion of possibly doing it for the first time, or just getting into it. And we talked a lot about your early experiences and things like that. Going back to when you first started, what advice would you give to somebody who's thinking about getting on stage for the first time?
The advice I would give is that it's kind of like, feels kind of like Instagram inspo, but like, you matter, I think, is a really good thing to remember. I think, at least for me, when I first started, I was just like, oh, what do I have to say? And it's like, why do you think that your voice is less valuable than someone else's? Like, I think that it's really easy to kind of get deterred, and I think that you have to just remember, like, you are enough, and your experience is enough, and your ideas are enough. Like, you're enough. And even if later you realize you're like not good at it or whatever, you can find that out in your own time. But I think when you're starting out, you need to build yourself up a little bit and know that you're worth it.
That's a good answer. I thought you were just going to say move the mic stand. But no, that was really good.
It goes beyond that. You figure that shit out really easily. If you don't understand how to work your mic stand, definitely should not be doing stand-up.
Yeah, time to retire already.
Yeah, I think you can retire.
Sometimes they're all twisted, though, and they're really
difficult. All right, this is true. Sometimes I still don't know how to make it. I struggle with just making it tall, like, shorter. If a tall host is there, I'm always just like, hey.
That's a terrible host who doesn't lower the mic stand. Rotten.
Thank God.
Jamie Lee, ladies and gentlemen, you could find her on Twitter at The Jamie Lee. Find her on Instagram at Real Jamie Lee.
Really Jamie Lee.
Really? Yes.
Really,
I'm sorry.
Jamie. Oh, no, it's fine.
I read it wrong. I'm sorry. That was my fault.
You know what? It is okay. I forgive you instantly.
Shucks. He's so forgivable. That's the only reason he's still alive.
At Really Jamie Lee. I have like such a good vibe towards humanity today now. For having Jamie Lee here.
Guys,
so
I'm just playing with my hair, rocking out.
If you want to have a good time this weekend, come see her. Four more shows.
Yes.
Tonight, 2. Tomorrow, 2. Yep. Tickets, 585-4-COMEDY or visit carlsoncomedy.com. And I'm looking forward to season 3 of Crashing.
Thank you.
And looking forward to see where you end up because I know you're working on a movie. You're working on some other stuff. So it's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And Godspeed, Jamie Lee. We're going to be back next week. Cam, adequate job as usual.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Brian Ball. Ugh. And Ross Johnson really did a great job. We'll see you all next week. Don't forget, follow us on all that stuff. You know where to find us, YouTube, wherever fine podcasts are sold. Don't forget to leave that 5-star review, and one of you will win Jim LaChase's Captain America mug. See you next week. Thank you. Goodbye.